starting Sefer Shoftim. So today we'll spend some time introducing Sefer Shoftim, and then Amir Tzah Hashem, starting next week, we'll begin with Perek Aleph and move through the Sefer. It's a drop shorter than Yehoshua, 21 Parakim instead of 24. But so we'll see how long it takes us. Okay, so just to remind ourselves of one thing we spoke about when we introduced Sefer Yehoshua, and that is that, you know, what's the point of learning Navi? So we learn Navi, of course, as Chazal tell us, that the only Nevuos that were recorded were Nevuos that were Hutzruchu L'Doros, Nevuos that were necessary for future generations. That all of these stories and these episodes and the Nevuos that accompanied them were all important for us in future generations to understand, to recognize, to learn, and to learn from. So we learn, you know, from all these stories, we learn about life, we learn about how to live as a Jew in the world. We also believe that these lessons are timeless, so even though there were obviously different environments and different factors and scenarios that happened in Sefer Yehoshua and Sefer Shoftim, nevertheless, there are still things that can be applied to our lives today. We'll learn in Sefer Shoftim, one of the things that B'nai Yisrael struggle with to a great extent is Avodah Zarah, right, which is exactly what Yehoshua warned them about at the very end of Sefer Yehoshua, as we discussed a little earlier. And so, you know, we don't have Avodah Zarah per se today. You know, we certainly, maybe it exists somewhere in the world, but we certainly don't have that Yetzer Hara. We certainly don't have any desire to bow down to any idols and anything like that. But at the same time, we have, you know, what we would refer to as our personal Avodah Zarahs, you know, whatever they might be, whether it's Kavod, whether it's Taiva, whether it's money, whatever the case might be, you know, different things that we worship that we sometimes get carried away with, and we can apply some of those lessons to the things that we have today. So we don't have maybe, you know, typical Avodah Zarah, but we have our own personal Avodah Zarahs that we can implant. There's a fascinating Gemara, and, you know, for another time we can go through the rest of it. But in source number one, it's a famous Gemara in Bava Basra. Anyone, I still remember, maybe some of you also, in my introduction to Bible class in YU. I'm sure some of you probably took also introduction to Bible in YU. And I remember in that class, one of the staples of that class is this Gemara, because this Gemara in Bava Basra goes through all of the authors of the Sifrei Tanakh. So
in YU, they didn't have introduction.
They didn't have introduction to Bible. Okay, so I guess it's a new thing. So the says the Gemara, quotes a Braisa, Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught, Sidron Shel Nevi'im. This is the order of the Nevi'im. And here the Gemara goes through exactly what the order is. As we know, Yehoshua, Veshoftim, Shmuel, Malachim, Yirmiyah, Yechezkel, etc., etc. Yeshaya, Shneimasar, which we know as Treyasar. And then, you know, the Gemara goes on a little bit of a tangent. And then the Braisa says, Umi Kasvan. And who wrote all these books? Right? You have all these 24 Sifrei Tanakh. You know, five of them are Chumash. And who wrote all these books? So the Gemara says, Moshe, the Braisa says, Moshe Kasav Sifro Uparshas Bilam Ve'iyov. So Moshe wrote his Sefer, which refers to the Torah, okay, presumably. Parshas Bilam, it's a question, so what's Parshas Bilam doing there, right? Parshas Bilam is part of the Torah, isn't it? So that's a good question. Ve'iyov, and he wrote also Sefer Iyov. Okay, well, let's move on. We're not going to focus on him. Yehoshua Kasav Sifro Shmona Psukim Shabbat Torah. Yehoshua wrote his Sefer and the last 8 Psukim of the Torah. And this is actually a machlokes. If the last 8 Psukim of the Torah, which describe Moshe's Petira, Moshe's death, was that written by Moshe himself or was it written by Yehoshua? So this Bryce is of the opinion it was written by Yehoshua. And this is important for us. Shmuel Kasav Sifro Vishoftim Virus. So Shmuel Hanavi. Right, Shmuel Hanavi, which is, after Shoftim comes Shmuel, so maybe we'll get there. But Shmuel Hanavi, he wrote his Sefer, meaning Sefer Shmuel. He wrote Sefer Shoftim, and he wrote Rus. But he wrote Megillas Rus. Okay, we'll stop here. The Braisa goes on, you know, other interesting things. David HaMelech, you know what he wrote, and etc., etc. Yeah.
What order are these listed? Are these listed in chronological order?
Yehoshua, Shoftim, Shmuel, Malachim?
Yes.
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, we'll see. Shmuel obviously Shoftim follows Yehoshua chronologically.
Right.
Shmuel was the final, was like kind of like the last Shofet, Navi Shofet, you know, at the very end. And then came the Malachim, and then came the kings. Mm-hmm. But during the times of the Shoftim, they didn't have the kings, and then the kings were introduced afterwards. So
Shmuel wrote Rus?
Yep.
Then how did it get to the ksuvim instead of being...
That's a good question. That's a good question. That's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, but that's a good question. You know, how did certain things make it into Nevi'im and certain things make it into ksuvim? What's the difference? If Shmuel wrote both, so Shmuel was a Navi. So Shmuel wrote both. Why are some of Nevi'im and some ksuvim?
Ksuvim were latter.
Maybe. Mostly. Maybe. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. It's a good question. But, you know, one interesting thing you see is that although, you know, we call this all Nevi'im, right? Shmuel is writing this. Shmuel was at the very, very tail end of the period of the Shoftim. So that means that at the end of this whole period of the Shoftim, what we refer to as the Shoftim, Shmuel is looking back on this entire period, which if you look around, you know, I saw different quotes. You know, I think it's around 355 years. I saw that. I think the Art Scroll brings that in one place, or maybe I saw the OU has an introduction to Shoftim. So I was looking around a little bit. I believe they give the number 355. So this period of time was 355. In fact, I saw in the OU that I think the Yoshua died in the year 2516. 2516, and then add 355, that was the end of the Shoftim. In fact, if you look at the back of the Art Scroll Shoftim, some of you have the Art Scroll Shoftim, if you look in the back of the Art Scroll Shoftim, they have a nice list of all the Shoftim, how many years each one you know, led for, and what exactly the years were. At the very end, they have a nice in the appendix. So you can check it out. But what's fascinating, I'll take a question in just 1 second, but what's fascinating here is that, so you know, Shmuel is looking back, right? At the end of this period of 355 years, Shmuel's looking back at this whole period, and he's recording events that already happened, right? Meaning he's not writing this is not Nevuah, right? He's writing a history book, essentially. He's writing a history book of the things that happened over the last 355 years, what he feels were the important highlights, incidents, stories that Bnei Yisrael can learn from, and that's what he's committing to writing into this book, which, you know, later became canonized as part of Nevi'im. So it's an interesting perspective. We're reading one of the greatest Nevi'im's, you know, recollections of the last 355 years and what he feels we can learn from this time period. Yeah.
Okay. Where does Nevi'im Rishonim end and Nevi'im Achronim begin?
That's also a good question. I believe the Nevi'im Rishonim ends after Malachim. I think Yirmiyah and on, I think, is more Nevi'im Achronim. I may be mistaken, though. Yeah. Okay. So let's look a little bit, let's think a little bit about what's going on here. Just to review one pasuk at the very end of Sefer Shoftim, which we read, not the last pasuk, but towards the end of Sefer Shoftim, and that's in that's source number 2 under Beis there, Yehoshua Uzakenim. So following Yehoshua's death, right, well, what basically what happens is Yehoshua dies, and after Yehoshua, the Zakenim rule, right? The Zakenim rule. I saw written somewhere that it was 17 years. The Zakenim, you know, ruled for 17 years, and these were the Zakenim that were alive in the times of Yehoshua HaNavi. And the pasuk says that during this time, both during the lifetime of Yehoshua and during this, you know, rule of the Zakenim, things were pretty good, right? The pasuk says, this is Perek Chavtal, pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayavod Yisrael es Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua, v'chol yimei ha-Zakenim asher harichu yomim acharei Yehoshua. Bnei Yisrael worshipped Hashem the entire lifetime of Yehoshua throughout the duration of the Zakenim, which harichu yomim, many years, right? We're talking, let's say, 17 years after Yehoshua's death. V'asher yodu es kol ma'aseh Hashem asher asa liYisrael. And we made this point when we learned this pasuk. This is important because these were the last people that were yodu es kol ma'aseh Hashem asher asa liYisrael. These were the last people that saw everything. You know, they saw everything. They saw what happened, you know, in the midbar. They saw, right? I mean, you know, they were part of the generation that was, you know, instructed by Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, with Yehoshua. And then eventually they started to die out. And once they started to die out, that's when these problems began. Okay? Now, where did the problems really begin? And this is fascinating. When Moshe died, right? When Moshe was about to die, he was very sensitive to one thing. And what was that? Appointing a successor. Right? Moshe was very passionate about appointing a successor. Chazal tell us he really wanted his sons to take over. Right? And Hashem told him that's not going to be the case. Right? But if you look at source number 3, these are Psukim and Parshas Pinchas. Right? We'll just run through these Psukim quickly so we get a sense of what's going on. Vaydaber Moshe al Hashem, Moshe speaks to Hashem. Moshe speaks to Hashem, right? Usually it's Vaydaber Hashem. Moshe, right? Moshe speaks to Hashem here. Yivkor Hashem Elokei Aruchos L'chol Basar Ish Al Ha'eda. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need you to appoint someone. Elokei Aruchos, right? You're someone who understands everyone. You know, we need an Ish Al Ha'eda. We need a person, one person, who's going to lead. Right? I'm going to die. We need one person to take over who's going to lead B'nai Yisrael. Asher Yitzei Lifneim, Asher Yovo Lifneim, he'll go out in front of them, he'll come back. Asher Yotzim, Asher Yivim, he'll take them out, he'll bring them in. Velosiya Adas Yisrael Katzon, Asher Ein Lohem Roa. And the Jewish people shouldn't be like a flock without a shepherd. Right? The imagery of the shepherd. Right? That's what we know, is that that's the Jewish leader, is really the shepherd. And Moshe Rabbeinu is saying it himself here. Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, you're right. Who should you appoint? Not your sons, as Chazal tell us. The Moshe had in mind his sons. No, not your sons. Kach l'chos Yehoshua ben Nun. Right? Yehoshua ben Nun, ish asher ruach, well, he's a man of spirit, v'samachta es yodcha alav, and give him smicha. In those days, smicha meant, right, literally, you know, putting his hands on his head and giving him that title. V'amarato oso lifnei alozer, akon lifnei kol ha'ed, v'tzivisa oso le'enehem. And Hashem says, I want you to do this while you're still alive, in front of the eyes of all the other people, so that everyone knows who the successor is going to be. Right? So Moshe is sensitive that we need a successor, Ish Al Ha'eda, one person. We need to lead this people. Hashem says, you're right. And it's going to be Yehoshua. And this is how I want it done. I want everybody to recognize that you are giving this power, you are giving this authority to Yehoshua. It's happening in front of everyone's eyes. Everyone sees Moshe is dying, Yehoshua is taking over. No questions, no machlokes. No, who's going to be the next successor? This son, that son, this son-in-law, the other son-in-law, right? None of this, right? This is who it's going to be. V'nosatam hold cholav, you're going to give from your glory to him, l'man yishmu kol adas b'nei Yisrael. This is the way that there's going to be unity, that the Jewish people will listen to their leader, right? Because if they know that their leader was appointed by Moshe Rabbeinu, he's the leader, that's it, right? We adored Moshe, so that's it. He's going to be, Yeshua is going to be the next leader, and that's what we find, as the Pasuk says, right? As we just read before in Yehoshua, Vayavu Yisrael es Hashem kol yimei Yehoshua. There were no problems in the times of Yehoshua, right? What was the one incident we had was Achan, right? That was the one story that we had where Achan, you know, sinned. Other than that, you read the whole Sefer Yehoshua, it's almost like a bliss. You know, there was almost no problems, no major averos, no rebellion. You know, I mean, it was great, almost smoother than the reign of Moshe. I mean, the people were kvetching and complaining the whole time. Right, and you did have, you know, wars and uprisings and things like that. Yehoshua was like, it was very smooth. Okay, pasuk chaval levinei Elazar Hakohen yamor v'shalo b'mishpat ha'urim levinei Hashem al pi v'yetzu v'al pi v'yavo. He should consult the urim v'tumim, which will be important as we begin sefer shoftim. Keep that in the back of your minds. Chol b'nei Yisrael yitov v'chol ha'edo. The whole Jewish people will be there. Vayas Moshe kasher tziva Hashem oso Moshe. Goes along exactly with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, commands him. He brings Yehoshua in front of Elazar, who's the Kohen Gadol, because Aaron already passed away. And he commands him and he says, you're going to be the next leader. It's like a big, momentous event here. We're transferring the mantle of leadership from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yehoshua. Moshe's still alive. It's La'enei Kol Ha'eda. The Kohen Gadol is overseeing this. I mean, everything is very official and very clear. What happens at the end of Sefer Yehoshua? Right, we just read the Psukim. None of that. Right? Yehoshua, you don't find a peep. He doesn't make a peep about appointing a leader. Right? There's no talk about appointing a leader. He doesn't come to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, hey, I'm about to die. You know, you need someone else to appoint to lead these people. Listen, the job wasn't done, right? Keep in mind, you know, they had conquered a nice portion of Eretz Yisrael already, and they had divided the whole Eretz Yisrael, even the parts that weren't conquered yet. So they knew, they had a game plan, they had a strategy, they knew what they were doing, they knew where they were going. But at the same time, there was a lot still had to be done, right? And not only that, but it's at the end of Sefer Yehoshua, what did he tell them? You got to get rid of your Avodah Zarah that you have, right? They still had those, the Getchkes, right? They still had them in the basement. Right, the gold and silver idols, you know, it wasn't 100%. They needed leadership. Yehoshua didn't talk about it. Right, Yehoshua didn't talk about it. Why? Who knows? Right, I don't know. I don't know if Chazal say anything about it. I don't know honestly. But we don't find Yehoshua with this passionate desire that Moshe Rabbeinu had that, you know, make sure that there's a leader, Ish Al Ha'eda, to take B'nai Yisrael into the next phase, into the next generation. Maybe Yehoshua, maybe it was his humility, and he felt, listen, who am I anyway? So, I'm going to die, so whoever will take over. Maybe he trusted his Canaan, right? Which we see, you know, the Zakenim.
Did anybody do it after he died?
So after he died, there was no one individual. There was no one individual. We have the Zakenim, you know, this group of elders that kind of ruled, you know, more or less. Not in the same way as Yehoshua was the man. He was the leader. But you have these Zakenim, and then after the Zakenim kind of passed away, so then begins, that's when the problems really begin. As we'll read about in Sefer Shoftim. Now Yehoshua did make a bris, you know, he made this covenant and he made the people swear and promise, right? And he, you know, we said, you know, he even made this monument with the stone and the, you know, and the aron and everything like that. So maybe he felt that was enough. Maybe he felt they're in Eretz Yisrael, so they don't need a leader the way that they did. You know, listen, you know, the Midbar was a very volatile time, so they needed Moshe Rabbeinu coming into Eretz Yisrael. You know, things are very touch and go, so they need a leader. Now they're in Eretz Yisrael already. They conquered most of it already. Maybe they don't need a leader for the rest of the time. But we see that the lack of leadership, you know, really, really made a difference. You know, Rabbi Horn spoke about on Shabbos the distinction between Aaron and Moshe. That's what we read about in this coming week's Parsha. Right? That Aaron, when Moshe went up to Har Sinai, and he was gone for 40 days and 40 nights, what happened? Cheta ego. And even though he left Aaron in charge, Aaron was a big tzaddik. Aaron was a big Navi. His older brother, he left him in charge. He didn't have the same capability of leadership. Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. He had his own strengths. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu was a different type of person. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu leaves and there was a little problem. We have Cheta Ego, which we, you know, we're still living with the repercussions of Cheta Ego, so to speak. Right? So here too, it seems that, you know, you need that leadership. You need that one person who can guide. That as much as, you know, as much as we believe in democracy and we believe in, you know, in a duality of voices and, you know, multiplicity of voices and people, you know, everybody, you know, chipping in with their voice, at the same time, you need one person at the helm. You need one person at the helm. I mean, even look at government, Lahavdil, right? In the United States, other governments, you know, you have a president, you have a prime minister, you have a king, you know, whatever the case, whatever type of government you have, there's one person at the top. Now, there might be checks and balances, and there might be other people, you know, he doesn't have unilateral power necessarily, but at the same time, there's one guy who essentially calls the shots. It's one guy who essentially calls the shots, and that's important. And that's important. And so often, you know, we think about Jewish history, you know, I mean, this is ancient Jewish history. We think about even more recent Jewish history, right? What happens when there's no leader? Right? What happens when there's no leader? I'm being recorded, so I don't want to mention anything specific, right? But, you know, what happens, you know, you think about different Hasidic sects, right? What happened? The Rebbe passed away, and there was no leader appointed. So what happens? Either chaos, confusion, right? You know, half, you know, some of the Hasidim going this way, some of the Hasidim going that way, some of them misguided, some of them not misguided, and you have some Hasidim where all of a sudden you have, they're splintering into different groups. And you have, you know, when the ones that live over here and the ones that live over there, you know, and you know, I mean, you know, I mean, we can list a, you know, we can list a handful of different Hasidic sects where the Rebbe passed away. He didn't appoint a clear successor, and then, you know, should this son take over? Should the son-in-law take over? Should the Talmud take over? And you have not only by the Hasidim, you have by the in the Litvish yeshivas. You know, sometimes you have. I remember, growing up, there was a yeshiva in Great Neck that had two Rosh Yeshiva. They were co-Rosh Yeshiva. Two Rosh Yeshiva never works, right? They last for a little bit, and then what happens? And then it becomes two yeshivas. And one yeshiva stays, and one yeshiva goes to a different place. You know, two Rosh Yeshiva never work. You know, you need to have, there has to be one person at the helm calling the shots. You know, you could have voices, you could have checks and balances, you could have people giving their opinion, a cabinet, you know, however you want to arrange it. But at the same time, there's got to be someone where the buck stops here. Why? Because when there's a problem, you need someone to take responsibility. Needs someone to stand up and, you know, instead of everybody pointing fingers at the other person, say, okay, this is your fault, one person says, you know what, this is my achrayus, this is my responsibility, the buck stops with me, and we're going to stop this, we're going to improve things. Right? That's what you need. You need that leadership. And that's what was missing after Yehoshua died. Things were okay for 17 years. You know, throughout the time of the Zakenim, you know, as the Pasuk says, you know, the Zakenim still knew about what happened, they still saw, you know, all the wonderful nisim and of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They started dying off. You know, you didn't have that leader. You didn't have that one person to say, listen, people, you know, knock some sense into the people and say, listen, you got to come around. You got to whip yourselves into shape. Yeah.
Was anybody from the Zakenim that took charge? Let's say if there was a tiebreaker, how many Zakenim
were? I mean, listen, I mean, the Zakenim were 70 Zakenim, presumably. So it was a nice number of Zakenim, you know, but I don't think we know of any one individual really until the Shoftim, you know, really until the Shoftim, you don't hear about one individual who was more prominent or took charge. You know, you don't have it. It was a group. It was a whole group of people, and they, you know, they proceeded.
I'm sure it was Machlokes.
Yeah, right. And, you know, maybe that's when things started to splinter a little bit. But you just, you know, you see the crucial importance of, you know, having that one person at the top, you know. I mean, again, even in business, you know, you have the CEO. You have the CEO. So again, you have a board and you have everything, you know, you have all these voices that are, you know, giving their opinions. At the end of the day, there's one person who's gonna make that final decision. Who's gonna make that final decision. I remember there was once a school, whatever, something happened and the head of school was pushed out, you know, as unfortunately often happens. And they were left without like a head of school. And they had, you know, each individual division had their own principal. You know, so everybody was still, you know, the school was still managing, was still doing what, you know, they were still doing what they needed to do. They had the principal still in charge. But I remember somebody from the, you know, who was familiar with the school told me, and they said, you know, it's not the same. You know, you had that one person, he was the head of school, he was in charge. If there was an issue, if there was a question that had to be decided, you know, it came to his desk and he made a decision. Yes, no, you know, right, left, mutaras, or whatever the case was, you know, he made the call. And now you have, you know, the third grade principal and the fifth grade principal and the high school principal. You have 10 different principals and everybody has a different opinion. Maybe they vote about it, maybe not. But in the end of the day, you don't have that same authority of saying, okay, you know, I hear all your voices, I hear all your votes, I hear all your opinions. This is what we're doing and this is how it's going to be and let's go. You know, you don't have that. And that's really where some of these problems in Sefer Yehoshua really begin.
Rabbi,
yeah.
If it was so important, and it definitely was, and we don't know the answer to this, but where was Hashem?
Why didn't he nudge Yehoshua and say, listen, you know, you really have to appoint someone? That's a good question. Why didn't he feel it was I don't know. Okay, I mean, you see just a couple of psukim that, you know, obviously we'll read these as we go on, but just a couple of samples as we go, 5, 6, and 7 here. So we have 5 on this page, and then the next page I have 6 and 7. So these are just some of the psukim that talk about, you know, the importance of the leadership, and really in the case of Sefer Shoftim, the lack of leadership, which really caused the problems. Look at Pasuk Yedzayin, and again, these are out of context, and we'll discuss them in context when we come to them. But this appears a few times. By Yomim Mahem, you have almost like this pasuk is really summarizing the problems of Sefer Shoftim. By Yomim Mahem, Ein Melech B'Yisrael. In those days, there was no king. There was no leader. Ish Hayosher Be'Ein of Yasa. Everyone did what they wanted. Right? Everyone followed their own whims. They did. You know, whatever their heart desired, whatever they felt. Right? Pasuk Yud Ches. The same type of thing. By Yomi Mahim Ein Melech B'Yisrael. You know, you have a problem here, and this is the story of I believe it's Yud Ches's Pesel Micha, which we'll learn about. And then in Pasuk Chaf Alef, you have again by Yomi Mahim, literally the same pasuk. Ein Melech B'Yisrael Ish Hayosher Ve'Ein Av Yaseh. This is really what it's all about. That it's you know, everybody does their own thing. Everybody, you know, follows their own whims. And keep in mind, you know, part of the problem here also was that as we mentioned, you know, the whole land wasn't conquered. The Kanani was still there. You know, they had nations that were still there, that were still in Eretz Yisrael, who could have a negative influence upon Bnei Yisrael. Right? We learned about the fact that they still had Avodah Zarah within them a little bit. Yehoshua, you know, tried to make them get rid of it, and they took promises, and they made covenants. But at the end of the day, there was still something there. And when you have still those things, you know, those roots there, you know, lying dormant underneath the ground, and you have, and then there's no leadership, those are the conditions that are ripe for something to happen, for there to be a problem. Okay, let's take a look at what I wrote here. Os Dalid Galgal Hachozer. So this is one of the famous motifs of Sefer Shoftim, and we'll just run through some of these psukim. And again, these are psukim and Perek Beis of Sefer Shoftim. We'll get to them more in depth when we come to Perek Beis. But just to just to give us a little sense of the cycle, the Galgal HaChozer is the cycle, really, of Sefer Shoftim. And this, you know, and this Shmuel Anavi, who wrote Sefer Shoftim, he put this down, right? This is not, you know, when I was preparing this, I was looking, you know, maybe one of the Mefarshim says, and I saw it's the Psukim. And the Psukim themselves describe this cycle. So let's read through them quickly. This is Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Aleph. This is really where we'll see as we go through the Perek Aleph and the beginning of Perek Beis is almost like a chazara. It's almost like a review of Sefer Yehoshua and certainly the end of Sefer Yehoshua. You know, we'll see a lot of overlapping psukim, some of the things that we learned already. We'll kind of move through them a little quickly. And then Perek Beis is really where the story of the Shoftim really begins. So what happens? Beginning of right middle of Perek Beis, you have the Jewish people worshipping Avodah Zarah. Okay? They're doing evil in the eyes of Hashem. And they abandoned HaKadosh Baruch Hu, took them out of Mitzrayim. And they start worshipping these foreign gods. Who are they? The gods of the nations that are surrounding them. Because keep in mind, the nations are still there. Some of them are still in Eretz Canaan itself. And they bow down to them. And they anger God. And again, they worship these Avodah Zarah. Yudal vayicharav Hashem b'Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at the Jewish people. So step one, the Jewish people sin. They turn their backs on God, they worship Avodah Zarah. Step two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at the Jewish people. What happens when he gets angry? He gives them into the hands of the plunderers, of the ones who oppress them. So what happens? These people, right, the enemies of the Jewish people, they come, they attack the Jewish people, they subjugate the Jewish people, they oppress the Jewish people. And the people are persecuted, they're oppressed, they're subjugated, they're being defeated. Everything that Hashem did to them at that moment, at that time, was bad, meaning bad in their eyes, obviously. And Hashem promised all of this, right? None of this is a surprise. You read through the Torah. What does it say? If you follow Hashem, He'll take care of you. If you don't follow Hashem, He's going to turn His back on you, and He's going to let you, you know, get devoured and beaten by the nations that surround you. And then step three in the cycle, Parsak Tezayin. Vayakam Hashem Shoftim Vayoshim. Hashem appoints a Shofet. And the Shofet saves Bnei Yisrael Miyad Shosehem from the hands of those that devour them. Right? So this is step three. So step one, Bnei Yisrael worship Avodah Zarah. Step two, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry and He lets the Goyim, you know, have their way with us. Step three, the people cry out. Right, they're downtrodden, they're persecuted, they're oppressed, they cry out. Kadosh Baruch Hu appoints a shofet. But then what happens? Step four, v'gamel shoftehem lo shamayu. But then what happens? The Jewish people, you know, for a little while, okay, things are good. Oh, the shofet's helping us. We, you know, the shofet's great. The shofet's our leader. And then what happens? We get comfortable. What happens when you get comfortable? Ah, the shofet, his sermons are too long. Right, his sermons, you know, he's outdated. You know, it's things of the past. We don't need him anymore, right? They turn their backs on him. Kizonu acharei Elohim acherim, and the Avodah Zarah is still there, right? That Avodah Zarah is always still there. Vayishtachvu lohem saru maher min aderech asher holcho avosam lishmo mitzvos Hashem levasuchein. And again, right? Once again, right? Skipping a couple of psukim to pasuk chaf. Vayicharav Hashem b'Yisrael. Right? Again, they worship Avodah Zarah. Kadosh Baruch Hu gets angry. This is the cycle of Sefer Shoftim. We're going to read it. This cycle is going to repeat itself. I think there are 15 shoftim, I think, if you count it. This is the cycle. Bnei Yisrael worship Avodah Zarah, Kadosh Baruch Hu gets angry, different nations attack us, persecute us, oppress us, we cry out, Kadosh Baruch Hu appoints a shofet who saves us, things are good, and then we turn our backs again. And then we worship Avodah Zarah again, and Hashem gets angry again, and then the cycle repeats itself. So this is the cycle of Sefer Shoftim. Now, when you think about this,
so this was 350 years before Shmuel lived?
So the period of Sefer Shoftim began, I think the Cheshbon begins when Yehoshua dies, right? That's when the period begins, that's when the 355 years begins,
so
I think.
How does Shmuel know what happened?
That's a good question. I guess these were, you know, these were stories and traditions that he heard, you know, that were passed down. You know, I guess that they were important enough stories that people passed them down to their children, and these were, you know, everybody, the community knew. They may have been committed to writing also, who knows?
Who wrote a show for a Sefer Shoftim?
Shmuel. Yeah. Okay. Now, just to put it in the proper perspective, you know, when you read these psukim, you know, you read this and you think, wow, you know, this was really terrible. You know, it sounds like this whole period, 355 years, was like a real... You know, a real blot on our history. you know, 355 years of terrible, just the Jews worshiping Avodah Zarah, you know, almost the whole time. That's what it sounds like, you know, when you read the, when you read this, and then when you go through the stories. In reality, though, it's important to keep it in the proper perspective. Just look at take a look at pasuk at source number 9. This is a couple of psukim in the third parak of Sefer Shoftim, pasuk Yud Aleph, Vatishko Taaretz Arba'im Shana Vayamos Asniel Ben Kenaz. And so Asniel Ben Kenaz, it was the first shofet we're going to learn about. So, you know, he saved Bnei Yisrael, and things were good for 40 years. Right? So it's not like, you know, we shouldn't think that, oh, you know, it was just 10 months, you know, and then they went back to worshiping Avodah Zarah. You know, there were long stretches where things were good. Now this was 40 years, and then we read about again in Pasuk Lamed in that same Perek, Vatikana Moab Bayomahu Tachas Yad Yisrael Vatishko Taaretz Shmonim Shana. And then you had 80 years of tranquility, right? 80 years where things were good, Bnei Yisrael worshiping Hashem, you know, and everything was peaceful and quiet. So there were long stretches of tranquility, of times when Bnei Yisrael were doing the right thing. You know, we shouldn't think, Chas v'Shalom, that everything, it was just 355 years of just terrible, you know, averos and constant avodah zarah. But, you know, there was a cycle. There was a little bit of a cycle. We'll see also, it's interesting, I saw this pointed out, I can't remember now where I saw this pointed out, but one of the introductions, I don't know if it was the OU or the Art School, somebody mentions that that the number 40 appears many times in Shoftim, just even in these two psukim. We find the 40 years of tranquility and then the 80 years of tranquility. And you find several Shoftim that kind of reigned for 40 years. So, you know, obviously there's no coincidences in Judaism. And the number 40 often represents the conception of a child, of a fetus, right? That, you know, Chazal talk about the fact that until day 40 from conception, you know, you can still daven for a particular gender, right? But once it's 40 days, so then the gender is established and you can no longer daven. So that's you know, the idea that things are in formation until the number 40, right? I mean, think about it. The Torah was given. Moshe was on Har Sinai for how long? 40 days and 40 nights, right? Even the Mabul, how long did it rain for? 40 days and a 40 nights. Do you see the number 40? Sorry?
They're in the Midbar for
40
years.
They're in the Midbar for 40 years, 100%, right? So there's a lot, you know, 40 is a very important number in Judaism, and often represents like a transition from one stage to another, you know, from pre-Mabul to post-Mabul, pre-Matan Torah to post-Matan Torah, right? In the Midbar, pre-Eretz Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael. So the 40 years are often representative of some sort of major transition from one phase, from one stage to another. So that's another important thing to keep in mind as we go through Sefer Shoftim, that sometimes these 40s represented, you know, these transitions from different periods of good and periods of tranquility to periods of Avera perhaps and things like that. So another important thing to keep in mind. Okay, at the very end there in Os Hay, I just wrote that there are three sections of Sefer Shoftim. Again, obviously you could break this up any number of ways, but just this is one way to break it up. The first part of it, which is all of Perek Aleph and the beginning of Perek Beis, really, as I said, it really is a review almost of Sefer Yehoshua, the end of Sefer Yehoshua, what was conquered, which parts of Eretz Yisrael were conquered, what remained what as of yet remained unconquered, and how we go about, you know, doing that. There's a story with a Malach at the end, which we'll talk about. And then, you know, section B there, which I wrote, with that's the beginning of Perek Vav, and that's the bulk of the Sefer through Perek Tezayin. So that's the period of the Shoftim, as we discussed, the cycle of the Shoftim, and then the particular Shoftim and how their stories fit into this particular cycle. And some of them, I'm sure, you know, we'll remember. Some of the Shoftim are more famous than others, and we'll focus on those stories. And then from Perek Yud Zayin until the end of the story, until the end of the Sefer, was three tragic stories that happened as a result of kind of like the end of the period of the Shoftim. Besides for just worshiping Avodah Zarah, there were three tragedies that happened. One was Pesel Micha, and we'll get into each one of these, but these are probably terms that maybe you've heard before. One of them is Pesel Micha, which referred to a little in Avodah Zarah of Micha, which we'll talk about. Pilegesh Begiva, which was a very tragic story with this woman who was abused and murdered, and, you know, and then what that led to was a civil war with Shevet Binyamin, and that was a result of Pilegesh Begiva. So these were three major tragedies that happened at the end of Sefer Shoftim. Again, you know, partially because of this lack of leadership in Bnei Yisrael. And as you know, as we said, you know, Bayomim Ohim Ein Melech BiYisrael Ish Hayashav Ein Av Yasa. So as we go through Sefer Shoftim with, I think, some of these themes and some of these ideas in mind, you know, we'll focus on, number one, the Avodah Zarah, but relating it to our own Avodah Zarah. We don't have the classic of Avodah Zarah, but relating it to our own Avodah Zarah. Now, I'm sure in our lives we find similar cycles of times when we're not doing the right thing and things are not so good, you know, and then we daven and things get a little better, and then, you know, and then we go back to the way that we were. So, you know, think about that. Think about also the importance of leadership and of Gedolei Yisrael and Tamidei Chachamim who can lead us and, you know, who, that we can look to for advice. And sometimes in a vacuum where we don't have that leadership, some of the problems that Bnei Yisrael encounter and the importance of trying to avoid those problems as we go through. So it's a little early, but we'll stop here for tonight. And then Mirtz Hashem, next week we'll begin Perek Aleph of Sefer Shoftim.